Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is a Good Story It's Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Indeed. You bet. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
This is our last podcast of 2024.
We did it again.
We did it again. It's amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And we've already got next year planned out. It's on the website for those of you who want to check it out.
Yes.
So I have been running out of Christmas movies to pick. So I picked Love Actually. But it's funny.
So
it's like, yeah, every year now I'm like, what do I do for Christmas? You know, if I've got the Christmas pick. But yeah, I have run dry. So I would love to hear if anybody has some suggestions. But anyway, I picked Love Actually. I really like the movie. There's a lot of, I'm going to say, different kinds of love here, and some good examples and some bad ones.
So, it's interesting because this is just a fun movie.
Yeah.
I mean, and there's parts of it that I think there's so many vignettes. Is it like 9 different couples or
something?
There's a billion couples in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so, there's some of them that hit better than others for me. And I imagine everybody's kind of like that. But even though it's flawed, I love it. I love it so much.
It's just fun. Oh.
Yeah.
And it's one of those movies, too. You know, there's so many characters in this movie. It's one of those things that at the beginning, you're like, what does this all have to do with each other? It doesn't really make any sense. And then at the end, it all just kind of pulls together, and I just really love that. You know, you see that there's relationships that you didn't even know that people had, and they're all showing up at the same thing, you know, the same event at the end. So I don't know how much we want to, and by the way, Billy Bob Thornton as the President of the United States, I feel that if we could have that right now, I would be pretty happy. Even though he was a little snaky,
But, I never thought about it that way, but you're right. That's interesting. Because when you think about, this is a definite sidebar, but it's Christmas. There could have been eggnog involved. I'm not sure. But when it comes to movies with presidents in them, usually I think of The American President, which we have yet to watch, but that has Michael Douglas, and it was written by Aaron Sorkin. So it's, you know, it's very West Wingy and how it's looking at everything. But Billy Bob Thornton might be what you need to get you out of a lot of trouble right now. He is a huge womanizer, and he is pretty condescending. So that might check out for Americans. I don't know.
That is too crazy. Yeah. So this came out in 2003. So we're post Clinton. There's a little Clinton in him.
Yeah.
And we're also post Bush, right? No, were we in the middle of?
I don't know.
Yeah, you know what? That's what. I'm pretty sure that Bush was like
George Bush.
Yeah, George Bush Jr.
George W.
Yeah, W. We were. I think he was till 2008.
Okay.
If I recall correctly, yeah, because 2001 was 9/11. That's all right. So, yeah.
I'm sorry. Look what I'm finding here. This is the Wikipedia page. It talks about it. It says, in 2009, during President Barack Obama's first visit to the UK, Chris Matthews referred to the president in Love Actually as an example of George W. Bush and other former presidents bullying of European allies. Commenting on this, Mediaite's John Brashad described the U.S. president character as a sleazy Bill Clinton / George W. Bush hybrid.
Oh,
so
that's
you
funny.
Nailed it. You nailed it.
That's too funny. I definitely detected Clinton. That's too
when
funny.
When you said that, I was just like, I wasn't thinking about 2003, but
that's too fun.
But it inspired one of the best little speeches in the whole thing.
Yeah,
from Hugh Grant.
That was good stuff. So, and Hugh Grant is the prime minister.
Oh, right.
And yeah. So I mean, what I feel like we're 100% spoilery here, or just going to have to dive in, because there's just what this movie is just the stories of all these couples. Some of it is how they met. Some of it is them falling in love. Some of them is having marriage difficulties. But you know, it's like we can take some of these and discuss the stories, that's around them, but I don't know how we can do that with, any fun at all without being spoilery. So,
no. And I think, really what you need to, all you need to know is when, cause the whole, really it says Love Actually, but it expands on that when you're watching the title scenes and it says Love Actually is all around.
Yes.
And it starts off with this big scene at the airport of all these people greeting each other. And it's every example. It's the grandfather and the little kid. Yes. It's the young couple. It's everything. And you look at it and it just warms your heart right away.
Yeah.
And then it launches from that into these different vignettes of all these people whose stories are intertwined. And so at first you are kind of just kind of taking it in and sorting it out. But it's really skillfully done because each story winds up being focused on enough that when you're watching the story and you start to see other familiar people from the other ones come in like, oh, this is your sister. Oh, this is your next door neighbor. Yes. Oh, or whatever. Mm-hmm. You kind of go, oh. And one of the things that I liked about it watching it this time, and this kind of, it is specifically a Christmas movie, and we'll talk about that too. But one of the things I liked is it makes you think about, it's almost like it's from a smaller town or just a neighborhood where everybody kind of knows everybody. So they're kind of in and out of each other's lives, sometimes peripherally, sometimes in an important way. And it gave you that sense of community. You knew who all these people were as they were dodging in and out. And so I liked that also because this is when you have the Christmas parties, the phone calls with people you don't get to talk to, all the things. So
yeah.
I like that environment. And so that's, I think, what we could say and then dive in.
Sure. All right. Well, I think that's perfect. That's a perfect way to go. But yeah, after we see all that heartwarming stuff, we get Bill Nye as the aging rock star singing an embarrassing Christmas version of a song. And, but he's like, we're love doing this around. Anyway. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we see that first relationship, him and his manager, which is a nice, I liked that one. The Joe, the manager, mm-hmm. Joe, the manager was saintly, I think.
What a good guy.
Yeah.
And that is one of the things I liked is when you stop and look at it, of course, we recognize all these kinds of love, but he didn't, the writer, director, did not limit himself just to things that would feel good or end well. Because agreed. Love works out in all different kinds of ways.
Yeah.
And it was interesting to me to think about it and go, oh, there's one that's purely platonic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the love of friends. That's Billy Mack and Joe, his manager.
Right. Yeah, absolutely right. Yeah, and there's unrequited love, and there's even some objectivity of sexual objects, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of my favorite actors of all time is Martin Freeman, and in those scenes,
yes.
I think that actually had something really profound to say about the objectivity of sexual portrayal on film. I thought that was a little bit interesting to me. So it was this couple that met doing a scene for a movie, or
they were stand-ins.
They were stand-ins
for pornographic
right.
films, so they would have to be naked or kind of mimicking various actions so that we could get the lighting right. And I was like, really? Okay, I'll just suspend my disbelief on this.
Exactly.
I feel like porn films are not doing this stuff.
Right. And that is a little bit of a warning. There is some nudity in this.
Yeah.
And
But it was 2003. Of course, there was nudity in it.
It made it look so ridiculous that I thought that was a statement. I kind of appreciated the statement.
Yeah, because although they were mimicking these sexual acts, they were just ignoring what they were doing because it was just work for them.
Mm-hmm.
And they were meeting. It was the most crazy meet cute kind of thing, because they were the most sweet, innocent, charming little couple you'd ever want to meet.
Yeah.
And that's, and what it, you're right, because what it shows is sex doesn't mean anything if there isn't true love behind it.
Not a thing.
Yeah.
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 That's exactly right. Yeah. So I don't know how, I mean, how we want to proceed here. There's, do you want to pick one that you particularly liked, a relationship?
Well, I could do that, or we could also kind of look a little bit at where are the contrasts maybe between some of them. I don't think it was written that way, but when you talked about, unrequited love, so you have one couple, which is Keira Knightley, who's getting married to the love of her life, but his best friend, they keep saying, oh, you're so cold to her. You're so this and that. And what it is he is so in love with her himself that he has to act that way in order to not betray his friend and to honor their relationship properly.
Right. Yeah.
By not telling his feelings or trying to mess things up or get things for himself.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the other, the unrequited love. So he's being unselfish in that way.
Mm-hmm. And then you have the selfish one. Oh.
Oh, well, there's two. So I was thinking the other unrequited love is the office person who works with Alan Rickman in his office, who's got the brother who's crazy. And she's been in love forever with this coworker. And it's real obvious. And Alan Rickman's going, just tell him it's Christmas. It's all this. And they actually have some moments when they're going to connect.
Hmm.
And, but the brother who's crazy keeps calling, and she gives him so much attention and can't abandon him. I think she should have, but can't abandon him.
Uh-huh.
So she is willing to give up the possibility of this other love to be true to her brother. And so, but that's the unrequited love, because that guy is attracted to her too. And I'm like, okay, first of all, what a lucky woman, because he was so good looking. And then when he was stripped down, I was like,
poor man. Yeah.
Check out that torso. You're the luckiest girl on earth.
Oh, shoot.
And he seems super sensitive, too. You know?
Oh, that's great. You know, what leapt to my mind is the other unrequited one was actually, I guess you can't call it love, but it was the president going after the prime minister's assistant.
Oh, you know what?
Yeah. So he was 100% selfish and didn't care who he hurt, whereas Keira Knightley's admirer, he was keeping it to himself. You know, he was doing, you know, it's like, you know, avoid the near occasion of sin, right? He's like, I'm not gonna say anything, because I think that's gonna put me in danger, you know.
And it was so painful too, because he was helping, he was the best man at the wedding.
Mm.
He had to arrange everything, he had to be at everything, it was just in his face all the time.
Yeah.
But you know what you made me think of with the president and Natalie,
mm-hmm.
that assistant of the prime minister, was the woman who is a secretary for Alan Rickman, who is going after him so hard, even though he's married and older and everything, and she doesn't care who she hurts, just like the president, as long as she gets what she wants.
Mm. Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, she was.
I hadn't thought of that at all, them being equated. And what happens is that the two ways that the people who love the object of the selfish person's affection react is kind of similar in a way, is, you know, the kind of pushing it away as much as they can. Because once married, and Hugh Grant isn't, of course, but he's like, you know what, this is too hard. Let's just put her, I shouldn't be with her.
Mm-hmm.
Move her to a different job.
Mm, right.
And then he can't resist. And each person has a chance, each object of everybody's affection, Natalie, mm-hmm. and then Alan Rickman, had the chance to make it right. And Natalie writes a card that says, I'm just going to tell you how I feel. And Alan Rickman makes the wrong choice and gets caught.
So you see, Natalie wrote the prime minister a note. What was the name of Alan Rickman's, the one that was after him?
Oh,
it's hard to... I have a big chart in front of me.
There's so many people. Let's see. I know. Well, the Wikipedia page has couples together.
Yeah, and I don't see Harry. That was heartbreaking. With Emma Thompson and Alan Rickman. Yeah, it was really terrific. What they did there.
Yeah.
And so funny. I mean, this Harry, movie is Karen funny. This movie is fun and funny and romantic. But I loved, very early on, Emma Thompson's daughter is like, I got my part in the nativity play and I'm the first lobster. She says lobster.
First that made lobster. Me laugh. Was there more than one? Well, yeah.
Oh boy. Yeah.
I know, because it's just that slight commentary on, let's just be super inclusive, whether it's appropriate or not. I mean, in terms of, don't have enough animals to be a lobster.
Oh, that's it. It's just too funny. But I liked what she did with that. And I don't know that I'm going to be able to find quote that she had to say. But when she confronted her husband over this potential affair, and I don't know that he ever followed through. I don't think he did. But her speech to him was heartbreaking.
Yeah. What would you do if you were me?
Right. Right.
Would you see this and then you wonder, is this just the necklace? Is it the necklace and sex or is it the necklace and love?
Right.
And you know, she must have faced these kind of things before, but it had never gone quite this far because when she's talking about, so-and-so's pretty after that Christmas party and he goes, is she? And she looks at him and says, you know she is. Be careful there, Harry.
Yeah.
So this means he's continually, that's his weak spot. They both know it.
Yeah, that's right. And she talks, she said something along the lines of meaning, the meaning of her life and how he would remove the meaning and she needs her life to be meaningful. And, it's a nice statement about marriage. Yeah.
I don't know if this is what you're thinking of, but when she's saying, what would you do if you were me? And he says, oh, I've been a classic fool or whatever it is. And she goes, and not only that, you've made a fool of me.
That's it. Yeah.
And our marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And what do I do with this?
Yeah. Did I add the word meaning in my head?
I think so.
But that's exactly
what she's saying. Because the reason she's so excited is he's never given her a really nice present like that necklace that she finds in his pocket that she knows is going to be a Christmas present. And then when she gets that Joni Mitchell album, it's like, oh, that's just like a knife to the heart. That's just such betrayal. Because she was so excited about it. And she's his wife. She should be the only one he's thinking about that way. But that woman was so aggressive. He wouldn't have done anything, I think, if she hadn't been continually, chasing him. Did you find it?
Yeah, I found it. Yeah. Okay. So she said, so Karen says, would you wait around to find out if it's just a necklace or if it's sex and a necklace, just like you said, or if, worst of all, it's a necklace and love? Would you stay knowing life would always be a little bit worse? Or would you cut and run? And then Harry says, oh God, I'm so in the wrong, the classic fool. And Karen says, yes, but you've also made a fool out of me and you've made the life I lead foolish too. I think that's the part that stuck in my head.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Brilliant. I mean, it's just,
And the way he was acting then, I thought watching it, because I never exactly, I know it ends unhappily in terms of this confrontation and all this, but I was like, but maybe this is his chance to reform, to change. And then when you see it later, at the very end, when Hugh Grant's coming, everybody's coming back from the airport, from wherever they've been, right? Hugh Grant and the guy who went off to Milwaukee. and Alan Rickman's back.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh, what did you get us? This and this. And she goes, let's go home. Home.
Mm.
And I went, oh, no. He's not tried to make it up.
Mm.
Or maybe she's just done. Maybe he's done it so many times.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Right. I guess we don't know.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. Yeah. And her brother is the prime minister.
Yeah.
That was kind of cool.
That's one of my favorite relationships, because Hugh Grant can be so charming, and he is so charming. And Natalie, whoever played her, was just so sweet also.
Yeah, Martine McCutcheon. Okay. Yeah, she was terrific. She was terrific, yeah. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, and he had her, you know, so after the POTUS thing, after the president thing, he had her reassigned. But, you know, I think that he was just worried about scandal. Again, is it like avoiding that occasion? He was like,
I think you're right.
You know, and then so he said, you know, well, if we do that. And then she wrote him a note, a Christmas card that had what her feelings were. And then he went and found her. And then it felt, you know, I was wondering if this director did, you remember that movie that we did with Hugh Grant and the kid and Tony, what's her name?
About a boy.
It felt like that a little bit.
I think this is Richard Curtis. I think he did things like Four Weddings and a Funeral.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of stuff. Okay. Let me just look real quick.
Yeah, and I just wasn't sure.
Oh, Notting Hill, which I love.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. But about a boy, I was just curious if there was a connection there, because it just felt like that. You know, the whole...
Paul Weitz and Chris Weitz.
Okay. Directed and it was a Nick Hornby novel. So, but I loved it. And gosh, that was after, wasn't it? So he did About a Boy in 2002. Oh, wow. It was right before this one.
No, I think that he was hot for all that stuff then. I mean, he was the flavor of the moment. I mean, until he had that unfortunate incident with the stripper, whatever it was.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
And now he's playing villains.
Oh, yes.
And he's really good at it, because he uses that charm in a way that's just turns on you.
Did you see the Dungeons and Dragons movie?
I did. That's what I was thinking of. He was just so wonderful
He was good in that. Yep. It was really fun. Really fun. And then I loved, you know, at that event where this Christmas pageant was going on with the lobster. And it turns out that Natalie has a cousin or
a little brother or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is also an octopus in this thing, you know, because of course you can have an octopus and a lobster, but they all end up in the same place. And we also have Liam Neeson's character, whose wife had died before the movie and was taking care of a son that was a stepson. Yeah. And all the advice and stuff that they talked about, I just thought it was great. They really loved it. And he's this kid, Sam, learning drum. that scene where he's like, you know, okay, there's only one flaw in what your plan is. Because the kid watched TV and he saw the rock star on TV and he said, I've just got this idea. You know, he saw Bill Nye.
And here's the thing that he saw. And I liked this little bit, and then we can go right back if you don't mind.
Oh, go ahead, please.
Okay, so as we watch Bill Nighy and this terrible Christmas song, we see he doesn't ever meet any of the other people, right?
Right.
But he's in the background, omnipresent, because there's this vote that's going to happen over the number one new Christmas song. And somehow he's in the contention for it, because he just says such outrageous things. He starts swaying the vote in his direction. And this is about halfway through to the point where every time you see him, it starts off very low rent when he's recording it, and it gets a little better and a little better. And this is where he's on some TV special, obviously, and it's him standing there singing, looking much better dressed than before. And it's all the band is all these gorgeous women who are dressed up as Santas, you know, with the sexy Santa suit, and they're all playing instruments. But when they show them close up, they're all doing things like sensuously licking their lips and looking right at the camera. And I'm looking at this thinking of this kid watching this and not seriously just going, huh. And then but here's the thing. The grown-ups take away the message that you and I are taking away, which is, oh my goodness. What the kid takes away is, hey, girls like people who do music. They loved it.
I'm not sure he's wrong, but yeah, go ahead.
Well, that was it. Yeah. It's like, I was like, this is the way different ways kids and grown-ups watch TV.
Funny.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I love that. That's a great thing. Yeah, and he says, you know, so okay, my plan, Dad, is to learn, or he said, I'm going to play an instrument so well for this band that she's going to have to notice me. Yeah. And he says, oh, well, there's just one flaw in this plan, and that's it. You don't actually play an instrument. And we're like 3 weeks away from the pageant. Yeah. So Sam picks the drums.
Off he's he a goes. Prodigy, luckily. Mm-hmm. He totally gets picked for the band.
He worked hard. He worked hard. He skipped dinner.
He did.
Yeah.
He did.
He worked hard.
Yeah. That's well, the good thing stuff. I liked about that couple, the thing I didn't like, well, and actually, so there's the platonic, that's the father-son love, right? Yes,
yeah.
Even though it's his stepson. Mm-hmm. The thing I didn't like about that was the way that the first wife, I actually dislike her the more every time I see the movie. Because she made the memorial so light and funny and all this stuff. And I'm like, he's got to grieve.
Yeah.
And then it's just like a week or two later and they're like, well, if you met Claudia Schiffer kind of thing, you know? And I'm like, yeah, okay, fine. Yeah. But they're kind of, she was perfect. She's just there to throw them together, right?
Right,
The father and son. But so you've got the father-son thing. But what I love about them is as they're going along and he's telling the kid, okay, here's the kind of thing you need to be thinking about. He's explaining how a love relationship in the movies is.
Hmm.
He's there. The director who wrote the movie is telling us, he's telegraphing everything in case we didn't already know this. You have to have the dramatic run at the airport. You have to do all these things. And we're seeing all these relationships do all these things so that when that kid makes his dramatic run at the airport, we have Jamie, who has been learning Portuguese. He suddenly is like, he's there to see his family at Christmas. And he's like, nope, I have to leave. And he runs to the airport so he can go straight to Portugal and do a proposal in a foreign language to his love, who is standing on top of a balcony. I mean, perfect. So yep. And so these two couples are doing both doing those things, you know. The little kid trying to get the attention of his love and Jamie trying to get the attention of his. And the fact that Aurelia learned English was so sweet.
That was very sweet. Yeah. Just in cases.
Yeah, just in case.
So good.
Yeah, so there's more parallels in here that I don't know. I've never seen anything that said the director thought about it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But surely he must have thought about it some way. Oh, I saw he wanted to have 14 and he had to drop 4 of them.
But like, yeah, he must have. And you know, he's kind of poking fun and celebrating at the same time all of these movies. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he's obviously very good at them, you know, having done Notting Hill and 4 Weddings and a Funeral.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those were big movies at the time. I remember seeing those.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and that's Richard Curtis.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, and I also really love the fact that he'll just be, he doesn't care. He'll just go, he goes for the deep stuff. You've got Emma Thompson and Alan Rickman, but you can't always have it deep and meaningful. And because Jamie and Aurelia are kind of that way, deep and meaningful. But then you've got the guy, is it Colin?
Yeah. Goes to America.
Yeah. He says, I finally figured it out. British girls are stuck up. Well, no, it's because he's in the wrong class of party. Every time he makes these dumb remarks, he goes, I need to find an American girl because she'll think my British accent is wonderful. And I'm like Prince William. Mm-hmm. And his friend goes, no, she won't. He goes, oh, yes, they will. And I'm like, he's right. Yes, they will.
He's right.
They won't care. He's absolutely got it nailed. And then he goes to Wisconsin. He's like, I've heard of this place called Wisconsin. And I'm like, oh my gosh, Wisconsin. Why not just say Omaha? And you know, I mean.
Yeah. Oh, it's too good.
And everything super unlikely happens just as he was dreaming, man. So excitedly.
What's crazy is, you know, during that whole scene, I was like, oh no, he's in deep trouble. He's going to get robbed by these people or something like that. This is not going to go well.
Me too.
And then it went fine.
It was exactly what he hoped for.
Oh my gosh. It's just, that just made me laugh out loud.
I know. Because you look at it and you go, you know what? There are people who feel deeply and think deeply about all this stuff. But there's also people who just live life to live it.
Yes.
And all those people, all those girls he met and he were the ones who are just skipping along on the surface going, hey, this is cool. And they actually are allowed to fall in love and have their lives together too.
Yeah.
They don't have to be deep and all this stuff. And we are allowed to just go, oh my gosh, look at this. and laugh at it.
Oh, that's too fun. That's too fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. You bet. Wow.
One of the things I liked about this movie is, and I saw this written down somewhere. I'd love to think I was so smart I thought of this. But in this movie, and I think this works for love in general, as we know, when people make themselves vulnerable and express their love, those are the relationships that pay off.
Mm.
So, you know, when you think about Jamie and Aurelia and Hugh Grant and Natalie, Natalie had to write her true feelings in her Christmas card for him to go, oh my gosh, what an idiot. I've got to go find her and go door through the neighborhood.
Right. Well, that's cool.
Even Bill Nighy winds up telling his friend, he goes, well, now I realize after all this time and all these years and doing all this stuff with all these women, you're the bloody love of my life. You know?
Yeah.
It's like, that was nice. You're the only person I'd love. Yeah. Yeah.
And young Sam, he sure laid it out there.
Yeah. 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 And that paid off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then holding the cards to your vest, yeah, that makes difficulty, right? Like Alan Rickman and Emma Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, secrets between you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Colin was out there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, yes, and even really in the Keira Knightley one, I can't remember the name of that boy, of that guy who was the friend, but
his name is Mark, actor is Andrew Lincoln. Yeah.
Okay. The whole time he's keeping his feelings to himself, everybody's going, look, I know you don't really like her, but I wish you'd warm up to her a little bit. And it's only when he finally, through that real cute thing that does the cards and the caroling music and everything, but that's when he knows he's got to let go, but he's doing this first, and then he's letting go, and he gets the kiss of friendship from her, basically.
Yeah.
Saying, thank you for telling me all that.
Mm-hmm.
Because then she'll also be guarding herself more around him.
Yeah.
You feel like.
Yeah, you feel like that too. And I like, you know, to himself, you know, not for anybody's display, but to himself, he says, that's it.
Yeah. Yeah,
this is exactly it.
Exactly. Yeah. But he had to do that first.
Mm-hmm.
He had to explain how he felt to her first.
Because otherwise, he had to clear. It's like confession almost, right? You're clearing that relationship.
Right.
What was between us is a big wall, and we just tore it down. Now we can start, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. That's nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I really did like that because, as we've discussed, it's only when you're willing to be really truthful and vulnerable that you move forward with people.
Mm.
You have to be willing to make that mistake. You and I, before this, were talking about, you know, letting people live their lives and make mistakes if that's what's going to happen. Even if we can kind of see, oh no, don't do that, but they do it anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
You learn from it. You grow from it.
Mm-hmm.
You go in sometimes a new direction.
Yeah.
And I know this movie isn't made that way, but all these relationships, because here's the thing, we recognize all this stuff. The reason this movie works in a lot of ways is we know all these relationships. We've seen them all in different places, different movies, different books, different lives.
Mm.
So when he brings it all together, he's using all this shorthand and code to get us up to speed with every couple. And that's why when we see the guy going to Milwaukee of all places, having a Bud, Budweiser, please.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah, it's so exotic. Mm-hmm. And, we're ready for it to be trouble because we've seen all the ways these things can turn on an innocent, hopeful guy.
Right.
You don't often see it where it all works out for him.
Right. And it was purposeful, you know, like when a woman walked in there and she said, hey, I found this guy, he's Colin, he's from England, you know, and you just feel like she's setting him up, you know?
Right.
And I've seen that before, and that's what's going to happen, and it didn't. Mm-hmm. Good for Colin.
Yeah, and they get him back to their room, and they've only got one bed they can sleep in, and you're just like, oh, man, no, they're going to mug him and take all his money.
Right.
And nope, I was worrying, but no.
But no, yeah.
Yeah.
That was great.
Exactly.
That was great. So you said something about Christmas. What were you going to say about Christmas?
Oh, you
said we'll talk about that later.
Well, that was everybody toward the end start mm-hmm. saying, because when it's Christmas, you tell the truth.
Ah, yes, they did.
I thought that was really an interesting comment that Christmas is so pure.
Hmm.
It's the higher ideal that they held for Christmas in this movie, and in the secular world too. But in the I'm going to take that leap. When it's Christmas, you tell the truth.
Hmm.
And a bunch of people said that.
Wow. Yep, they did. Yeah, it was over and over.
And what happens at Christmas? They're not thinking this way, but I couldn't help it. The truth itself becomes a human being and lives among us to show us how to love and know what's true.
Wow. Yeah.
And that's how we all recognize all this stuff from this movie, because this movie, even though it's being funny and silly and all the things, it is expressing in miniature all these truths about faithfulness and betrayal and hopes and dreams and all that stuff. And all these people are hoping for something.
Yeah. Yeah.
All of them.
Right.
The ones that are betrayed are hoping for something.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Wow. I love that.
Yeah.
What a great thought. Yep, that is beautiful.
The only high-minded thing I have to say.
No, I love it.
Because it's really just fun.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, well, one other moment that I thought of that, I just remember that I would love to talk about a little bit is Laura Linney and her mentally ill brother who keeps calling.
Yes.
And there was a point, you know, where the guy she was with, he said, if you answer that, is he going to get any better?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she answered anyway. But I thought that was an interesting situation. She did say no, but she answered the call anyway, interrupting her own life. And it just makes you wonder. I mean, what was being said there? You know, is she can't let herself be vulnerable, and is using that to do that. Or is there such a responsibility there that she can't stand not answering that phone to talk to her brother? That was interesting.
Yeah, because I hate her choice so much because you're right. I feel like she wants, is it Carl? She's so interested in Carl. And has been for so long, had this crush for so long. And she's finally getting, and it's kind of like Colin going to Milwaukee, right?
Yeah.
It's all going unbelievably well. He also really likes her.
Yeah.
So much so that come on upstairs and let's just start stripping the clothes off. Because it was 2003.
Yeah,
but So I really was, I've been mad at her every time I've seen the movie for not letting the brother wait for one night.
Yeah.
And you're not told more about that relationship other than what she tells to Carl, which is just that their parents are dead and they're both over there and he's just, you know, difficult and all this stuff. But we've seen her with him where he's so unstable, he's going to attack her one moment. And the attendants are watching all the time just to stop something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I felt like, yes, she's doing this out of an obligation, but kind of like you said, is what is she hiding from? Because she will not abandon him. But maybe that's the wrong thing to think. Maybe it's supposed to be honorable.
Yeah, maybe.
She's sacrificing herself for his good, even if it's for a moment, even though it probably won't help him, but there's always that hope.
Yeah, maybe. Interesting. Yeah, that's a nice way to think about it.
Well, I just think of the people I know who, there are people you really, this one person especially, who my husband helps a lot. And she has driven away everybody in her life, everybody. And my husband sticks with it. He's such a good guy. And the things he's helping her with and everything are inconvenient a lot of the time. And he knows she won't be better. But he's like, I can't, if I don't do this, who will help her?
Yeah.
No one. Now, this guy I feel not quite that way about because he's in a mental institution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, he's not alone or you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Mm. But I think maybe it's that same kind of selfless love of willing the good of the other, which is the highest form of love.
Mm-hmm.
On my husband's case, I know that's the case in his situation with helping this person. But I wonder if that's kind of what this is intended to portray a little bit.
Yeah, very interesting.
Because do we see anyone mm-hmm. else who shows that kind of selfless love like that?
Mm.
I mean, there
yeah,
is.
I mean, it's, I think it's great. Mark, yeah, you're seeing that as a potential selfless thing that she's doing, and my mind immediately went to: is she not allowing herself to be vulnerable in a position? You know, and she's denying herself something that she doesn't need to deny herself. Is how I was thinking about it.
And I think that's kind of really what I really think. But the potential is there for it to be something else, and I think it depends on how you interpret the relationship with her brother.
Mm, yeah.
And we're not given enough to really do that. So it's kind of left really open. Because I'm like you. I'm just like, he's perfectly safe. It's not going to make him better. You can see him tomorrow. We don't know if he will even remember this tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, or if this is, and I also kind of thought this is that knee-jerk reaction of you don't allow yourself to think of different scenarios. I don't know.
Right. Right. So, yeah, I mean, the movie being about love, actually, you know, we'll say, yeah, well, there is a love relationship there. But yeah, it's certainly imperfect. It feels,
and a lot of these are, because she's the one person showing the brother any love.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, everybody else is paid to be in the institution and
work.
Exactly. It doesn't mean they're not nice, but we're not shown those details. So
very interesting. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
No, I love it. Very good. Yeah. But what a fun movie. It just is, you know, it's cool. You know, when you have this fun movie and there's these heavy moments in there and,
all of the contrasts of the different kinds of people.
Yeah. You know, as I think of that Sarah and Michael thing some more, you know, it's making me think about, you know, there is a problem of the other way too, where like if she was taking all of her opportunities while neglecting him, you know, would be another version of that relationship where she's like, I am going to go do my stuff, and regardless of what it is that you need. And that would be also unbalanced. We know people like that who, I mean, you hear stories sometimes of even, you know, kid neglect because you want to go on a date or whatever, you know, and this is the opposite of that, you know?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Gosh, there's a lot there. Yeah.
Well, right, and in a minor sense, because you're not given a lot of negative stories like that, but that's exactly what Alan Rickman, Harry, is doing.
Yeah, you're right.
He is doing what he wants, and with very little influence. It just takes a tiny push for him to buy an expensive present or whatever, and he's neglecting the things that he should be taking care of, the people who truly love him and who deserve his love.
Yeah.
And his selfishness is kind of the more functional way that people live in the world with it. But look, he's the one who's striking emotionally at his wife.
Hmm. Yep.
When he does that.
That's right. So. Yeah. Wow. Yes, indeed. Yeah. It's hard to end this on a heavy note because it's so fun.
I know. Well, I will say this.
Mm-hmm.
This movie has these things in it, but I ended the movie so happy. I was so glad you picked it. They have those uplifting moments. You know, there's Hugh Grant coming home at the airport and his Natalie running and throwing herself on him. There's, you know, Colin coming back with, here's Was it Henrietta or whatever? Yeah, Harriet, the name is so awful in this girl. Oh, my goodness. And she goes, well, I brought my sister with me. And, oh, well, she's very friendly. I'm like, dang, she's friendly. That girl is ready to just have a good time anywhere.
Oh,
so,
my gosh.
So that's happy. I mean, there's just all these really fun moments after watching Sam run through the airport to get to the girl right before she leaves, and then she comes back and follows him to the lobby or whatever.
Yeah,
at the last second. I mean, it's just you just feel good.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah,
yeah,
it felt great.
Yeah,
good feeling movie for sure. Yeah,
lots of fun.
Yeah, lots of fun. Well, good. Well, what a year this has been.
Yeah.
That's been
it's been
something.
A crazy year. But it's been a good year here on the podcast.
It's been a good year on the podcast. That's what I meant. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Forget all this other stuff that's going on in the world.
Let's not think about
Let's talk about the podcast world. Yeah, that's great. So our next podcast is going to be, we've got a guest. Father Stephen Gregg is going to join us. Mm-hmm. Ooh, was that a secret? Sometimes we say special secret guest. But anyway, Father Stephen Gregg is going to join us, and we're going to talk about The Betrothed by Alessandro Manzoni. Did I say that right?
And it's, I have no idea.
I threw some Italian in there.
Yeah, well, I could tell. It sounded very exotic.
That's a book that
he chose it.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have to nail this down. I know him through my son-in-law, grew up as a fan. Yeah, they grew up as close friends the whole life. Mm-hmm. He's a Cistercian priest.
Nice.
Or monk.
Mm-hmm.
He teaches English, and I think he teaches at the University of Dallas, which is a Catholic university.
Is it really?
Yeah, and he was saying that he's been trying to get them to put this on the grad students, reading list forever. So this is his chance to talk about it. And I was like,
perfect.
Oh, okay. Well, good. I won't have to say much then. I'll just read it and learn.
I love it.
So he's a super nice guy.
Oh, that's good. I'm looking forward to it. You bet. Even though I know very little about The Betrothed, other than it's very popular in Italy, I understand.
Super popular. I think it's kind of like they're Gone with the Wind in a sense. And there's a new translation out that's like 2021, 2022.
And it is the one I got. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when that came out, I'd never heard of it. When that came out, suddenly everybody who does reading podcasts and stuff started buzzing about it, and Catholics started buzzing about it.
Oh, cool.
So, I think there's some podcast, maybe Close Reads is going to talk about it next year.
Oh, good.
So I was excited because I was like, oh, good, because that'll be my excuse to read it. Nope, I have an earlier one. I'm doing it first.
Very good. So the version that I have and the new translation that you're talking about is, the translation is by Michael F. Moore.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what you'd call the color of the cover.
Orange?
I guess. It's not quite orange. It's a little more red than orange, I would say, but that's cover, and it's anyway, that's the one that I've got, and the one I believe is the correct one.
The current one.
Yeah. So very good.
And it was a mini series in
a mini series.
Does it seem right in Italy?
Oh, I believe that. Yeah.
Well, you know, if the Italians love it as much as they say they do. Mm-hmm. So it was an Italian miniseries starring Burt Lancaster. And it was a 1923 film. Oh, no, wait. Hold on. I think I'm reading the wrong page here. Uh-huh. Never mind. It wasn't a miniseries.
Okay.
I was reading some page that directed you to anything called The Betrothed.
Gotcha. So, it was first published in 1827. And the great Giuseppe Verdi, I'm not sure who that is, but I'm sure he's great, says, this is not just a book. It offers consolation to the whole of humanity. So that is some big praise right there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, all right then.
I love it.
I will say, reading along, I'm fairly early in. I'm only around a page 100 or so.
Mm-hmm.
But this peasant family is talking about something that involves a fine point of canon law in order to get this couple married. And I was like, oh my gosh, That's absolutely correct. They're exactly right in how they're talking about that. I was like, I didn't expect that in this book from a peasant family. So
love it.
These people know what's going on.
Yeah, you got to love some canon law.
Well, yeah, exactly.
That's wonderful. Anyway, all right.
I'm looking forward to Father Stephen telling us all about all of it.
That's great. Looking forward to it, too.
Yep.
So, yeah, so thank you for watching this movie with me, and thank you for this entire year. And I so very much look forward to next.
Me too. What would we do without this?
I don't have any idea what we would do. No. I don't know what I would do. So
no, I really appreciate you.
Yeah.
Oh, and you too. Yeah, that's the thing about talking about books and things. The way we have so long, I think we've said this before, but we can say it again. We've become such great friends.
Yeah. Yep, we have.
In ways I wouldn't have with a lot of other people. So.
Agreed.
Yeah, this gift from God to us.
Absolutely. Yep. Thanks be to God.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And Merry Christmas early.
Yep, Merry
Happy
Christmas
New Year
early.
And then we'll be back at it.
All right. Take care, everybody.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.